This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This is the besotted Pride of West London podcast, and we're coming to you, it's almost on the eve of the return of the Tony, Ivan Tony. He has been freed. He put out a little tweet the other day, I think it was yesterday, the day that his ban came to an end. I'm free, Ivan Tony is free, and you can just feel the energy as we're going into the Forest game on Saturday. Brentford with another player in their ranks, in fact with another two players in their ranks, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. I'm Billy Grant and I'm sitting here in the virtual joint with my man who was in Thailand a couple of days ago, but he's now taking a holiday in Cambodia. Laney, how are you?
I'm good, mate. I'm really, really good, thank you very much. Really excited that Ivan's back in the fold. It's the news that Brentford fans have been looking forward to all season. It's just dragged. It's been a long 8 months, and we are back to being the Brentford that we need for the rest of this season. We've got our talisman. We've got our number one player. We've got our leading goal scorer. He's back, and I can't wait to see what effect he has on Saturday.
Yeah, not quite the Brentford that we know and we need, because we do have about another seven players that are out still, like, you know what I'm saying? But he is going to be instrumental, no shadow of a doubt, in actually kind of basically just taking us up another little notch, because as everybody knows, we've had a couple of months which have not been the best. You know, basically we've been running on empty, as they say. I think it was that one game where we said we've literally run out of players to take off. You know, ironically, we're playing Nottingham Forest, who bought about 475 players, and they can boast about just bringing another player out of their rank because they've got so many. And we're sitting there thinking, oh my God, literally. I mean, we had two players on the bench against Wolves who we're meant to be the fountain of all knowledge, but I literally thinking, I've got no idea who these kids are. It was one of those scenarios. And you've got to laugh about it, because we're going to look back at this and we think, God, that season was quite a bonkers season, wasn't it? And technically, and fingers crossed, we're not going to go down. Technically, we could have been in a lot of trouble. But all I'm saying, and you know me, glass half full B, the fact that we'd lost Ivan Tony and Mbeumo and Rico and Hickey and all those players, and we're still in the position we are now, I think, quite frankly, is a miracle.
Yeah, well, you know, it's come in the nick of time, isn't it? Just before it gets any worse, let's be honest. You know, another 4 or 5 weeks of sort of scraping together an 11 that could compete in the top flight in the Premier League was a big ask. You know, we've got a number 3 now, and we've got a number 9 now. And there's no offence to Neil Maupay, who's done what he's you know, he's been working hard, but he isn't Ivan Tony, and he's not that sort of big centre forward. You know, he's good at kind of, you know, feeding off some scraps, but he's not the Brentford that we've known over the last 5 years, where, you know, we've been building you know, to replace Neil Maupay. We seem to have been in this, you know, retrograde step, trying to kind of scrape and survive before Ivan gets back. And now he's here. You know, it might work better for Neil. You know, the big man, little man, number nine, number 10, you know, knocking balls down as well as you know, getting goals himself, Ivan. So, you know, it does give us so many more options. And, you know, Brentford at their best in the Premier League needs Ivan Toney in the team.
That's right. Okay. So, I mean, listen, we're going to talk about Ivan Toney, and also in a little bit, we're going to talk about, because we've got a new left back. We've been talking about trying to get another left back in for about 2-3 years now. So we've actually got a left back coming, Reguilon, who we'll talk about in a little bit. But the big chat at the moment is Ivan Toney. And like I said, there's going to be loads of interviews flying around. There's been a couple of interviews already with Ivan Toney, both of them on Sky Sports as well. You know, and very, very interesting interviews as well. I'd advise you to sit down and look at them all rather than look at the 10 second or 20 second clips that they put out, which has been really, really upsetting people. He did an interview with Darren Lewis, which is a little bit shorter as well, which he gave his little vibe about, talking about, you know, him coming back and how excited he is coming back and how much he wanted to pay back Thomas Frank and all the people for backing him as well. And then there was an interview that went up probably a day ago on Sky Sports as well, which has got a lot of people fuming, where he's talking about, like, you know, if a big club comes in for me, you know, obviously I always wanted to move to a big club in the UK. You can never say never. And a lot of people are sort of saying, you know, Ivan, come on, you know, this isn't the right time for that. You know, you've just come back and we expected you to say that you're going to put your flag in the sand and support Brentford for the rest of, and play for Brentford for the rest of your life, like, you know what I'm saying. So like I said, we could talk around all those things, you know, in a minute as we're going to talk about that, because I think it's very, very important. But first of all, and I know you talked about it, Laney, are you excited for Ivan Toney coming back?
Yeah, massively. I mean, I'm massively excited for him. You know, he's paid a big price for what he did, and what he did was plain stupid. We haven't really got to go over that old ground again. We've had lots of podcasts where we focus just on that. So now it's literally about a line in the sand and looking forward rather than backwards. And as I said on the intro, it seems to have been a long 8 months. And for a club like Brentford, as well as the player, it's been a big punishment for us. As well as him, and we've paid a big price for Ivan's absence. But so yeah, I'm really excited. It's come, as I said, right in the nick of time, just before it gets any worse. And it just seems it's written in the stars, you know, that it's going to have an impact straight away. You know, it's we've been creating chances, and it's been crying out for him to be on the end of them. And, you know, now we can hopefully get the ball to the byline with our wingers and pull them back. And we've got someone there that's lurking, someone who's more natural and has got a bit more of a physical presence. So, yeah, I'm really excited for him. And I'm just excited for the players around him, because, you know, they've been creating chances against some really excellent defences. And some of them need to have someone on the end of it as well, because it just makes their hard work pay off as well. So yeah, I think I don't see there can be any Brentford fans that aren't excited to see Ivan back.
Okay, I mean, obviously we're seeing, I mean, I'm excited, I'm really excited. You know, I've done, like I said, a couple of interviews. One's going to be on BBC Sport the next day as well. I think I'm going to be on the Athletic podcast as well, and maybe another BBC channel. Well, you know, sort of quite a few people want to know what our opinion is going to be, what fans' opinion. I can't give everybody's fans' opinions, because you've all got your opinions, but I'm personally excited. I talk about as well the disappointment, and I think, you know, fans are going to love to say if they weren't disappointed in Ivan Toney, they found out that he got done for gambling, especially with the season that we had last season, okay? But the other thing that you've got to think about is that, look, it's done, we've got to deal with it. You know, it probably could have been worse, you know? You know, it could have been worse, and we've dealt with it, you know, admirably, and we've kind of come out of a hole quite well, and it's all about moving forward. Ivan Toney, we've got to ask a question though, you know, just listen, and I'm not trying to sort of cloudy his comeback and everything like that. Do you think Ivan Toney, because there was a thought that Ivan Toney didn't really care. We've seen a few interviews flying around, Laney. I'm not talking about his own self, not, you know, his own sort of, not say self-centeredness, but, you know, about himself, as in his confidence in himself, but I'm just asking you, do you think that he actually cares and he actually realises what has been done, actually, after seeing him talk these last couple of days?
He certainly seems a lot more humble and a lot more measured than he did in that Diary of a CEO podcast, which he did sort of, you know, 4 or 5 months ago. You can tell he really wants to just get back to playing football. The question, especially is it Sky, and Sky pretty much have got 24/7 rolling transfer news on their TV channels and the sports channels. So it does serve them to have bullet points and sort of, you know, quotes on rotation that kind of hint at possible transfer activity this window. Now, I think, you know, as Brentford fans that have been angered by the shorter clips of him talking about wanting to play for a big club and be challenging for titles and becoming England's number one striker behind Harry Kane, he talks about all of that. Wasn't necessarily surprised to hear him say that. I don't think there's anything we didn't know already. Now, you know, you could argue that he should have just said, look, I don't really want to discuss that at the moment. It's all about Saturday. It's all about, but I think that was, he knew the questions that were going to come. I don't think any of those questions hadn't been given to him in advance. And I think he probably okayed all of them. I mean, you could always wish that he didn't carry on with a couple of those sentences, but I don't think any of us are naive enough to think that he actually said, didn't he, if the right money comes in. So he knows that Brentford will accept a deal for him if the right money comes in as well. So it's a Brentford situation and an Ivan Toney situation. I just don't see now. I mean, there was a time where I just thought he would kick a ball for us again, and it was just, you know, he hadn't signed for that new agency to stay where he is. It looks now like we're going to be kicking his transfer into the long grass, and it will be coming, you know, in June rather than in January. But it's only 3 or 4 months away, isn't it, by the time he started. You know, we're going to be in February before we know it, and then sort of like we're ticking down the fixtures to the end of the season then. So it's still an imminent situation, but, you know, it doesn't seem to be like one we're going to have to cope with this January or in the next week or so. So yeah, I wish he said a little bit less, but I don't think he said anything we didn't know already.
I mean, one point that, you know, fans were a little bit sort of probably disappointed with previous to this, they never felt that Ivan kind of owned his kind of, you know, whatever's happened in this situation to get us, you know, to get him and the club into this situation. They never felt that he owned it. Okay. And even, like I said to you, when he did the Diary of the CEO, he never owned it. Now, looking at that interview as well, what is quite interesting, because he is a particular type, listen, I don't know him, you don't know him, a particular type of person. One thing that you do know is he's very, very confident in himself. But on the flip side of that also is, like, you know, he kind of, like the Sky guy, to be fair, sort of said to him, look, you know, I do find it quite hard to open up. And you can imagine, you know, with a person like that, with big personality, very confident in himself, you know, he may find it quite hard to open up. Him not owning it, is that possibly due to the fact that he literally finds it quite hard to do that? And the fact is that to do that, you have to kind of, you know, you have to go through certain, you know, things within your head and within your body, and, you know, and you just have to go through certain things to kind of get to that situation. And possibly him being out for 8 months and having loads of reflection time and realizing that he could do nothing about it. He couldn't wait for 2 weeks and get back on. He couldn't get his agent to fix it. He couldn't get the lawyers to fix it. He just realized, actually, to speak out on this interview, actually, this is a mistake. This has happened now. I realize it. There's nothing I can do about it. I need to actually work out how to move forward. And he kind of talked about that in the interview. And do you think that he has actually really now kind of come down to owning the situation so that he can move on?
I don't think we'll ever really know. I just think, you know, just because he hasn't broken down into tears and begged for forgiveness in front of cameras, maybe he has those kind of moments with his family. What you do in front of a Sky camera and what you know, your true feelings, I don't necessarily think of the same thing. This isn't a shrink's kind of confession. This is just kind of put him PR in his return. And the questions, there's a couple of questions that I haven't ever heard asked. No one said to him, in the latest one, he sort of said, do you feel guilty for not being in the team for your teammates? And he said, yes. But the question was, would you like to apologise to the fans for not being around? You know, I'm not saying I think he should, but he wasn't asked it, so I don't think he's going to just say, oh, I would really like to apologise to the fan, unless he's asked, would he like to? And he might say, he might just do exactly that. But
even though he did mention the fans as well.
It's not like a confession, was it? And I just think sometimes the interviewers are kind of a little bit wary about what they ask him as well. I thought it was a decent interview. I enjoyed listening to it, but it stopped short in a couple of places. The diary of a CEO certainly did. I was really disappointed with that from an interviewer's perspective and a listening perspective. I don't think it was a great interview at all. And I certainly didn't come out of it very well. So I haven't seen the perfect interview yet, but I don't think we will now. I think that's the end of that. He's back. I don't think he'll be going to be prodding over hot coals now of the past. I think that's the end. Maybe we're all a little bit bored of it now. We're not going to get that kind of perfect redemption, in terms of an apology. And I think I've come to terms with it just being as it is now. I'm just going to enjoy him while we've still got him, whether it's 2 weeks, whether it's 4 months. He's going to be going fairly soon. I just hope we get a really brilliant deal for Brentford Football Club, and we can actually get proper closure now where he can score the goals that keeps us, well safe of any nastiness, and he can go out with a bang, Bill.
Yeah, I mean, there's the I've got to say the question, I'm just bringing it back just quickly to the point. He said in this interview, I want to play for a top club, and people have just jumped on it from other clubs. Oh yeah, Brentford fans, you're so typical, you're so Tim Pot, player like that, you keep backing him, but he obviously doesn't want to play for you, and they're saying all these things, okay? But again, we're trying to put it into context here as well. As Brentford fans, we've known players who've stuck with us through thick and thin. Kevin Connors left for forever, what I'm saying? You've got players, and in the old school days, that's what players used to do. Steve Ball stayed at Wolves far too long, to be quite honest with you. But he was loyal to that club, and he stayed with them, and he stuck with them through thick and thin, right? And we're used to that in the old days. Nowadays, if somebody stays with you for more than 3 years, you're thinking, oh my God, that guy's been there forever, right? As Brentford fans, we're so used to our players leaving, and we're not saying that because we're defeatists, but it's just the way that the club runs, because we are a particular size club, and until we get the income coming in over a number of years, we can't do the things that these other clubs do, and we're never going to throw money at footballers in the way that even Nottingham Forest does, or Manchester City or Arsenal or all these other teams do. Maybe if you're in the Premier League for 12 or 15 years and you've accumulated 150 million each year, then things do change, but you have to get to that stage and do it in a process. So we've already sort of kind of got our head around the fact that Ivan Toney's going to leave, even though, yes, it will be frustrating. Whenever that will be, we don't know. We probably, if anything, have kept our fingers crossed that he might have signed a contract extension because of the 8 months that he's missed with us. But I think that is kind of probably unlikely. But saying that, if anything, there's an argument to say that he might have actually gone last summer. So we've actually probably got him for a little bit longer than we expected. Ivan Toney saying that he wants to play for a top club, which obviously means it's not Brentford. It means kind of somebody who's playing almost like Champions League football. Were you a bit miffed when he said that?
Not really. I mean, it takes a lot more to wind me up these days. But no, I'm not, because I'm not going to get involved in that big club bollock argument thing. Tim Pot Brentford, our club's bigger than yours. Yeah, I mean, probably they're all bigger than us at the moment, but we're doing our best to address that. Every season that we stay in this division, that becomes a little bit more childish. It's about how well run your club is. History seems to not count past a certain point. Is that it seems to be a sweet spot of history where some club fans, well, that's relevant, but before that, it's not relevant. You know, you talk to a Forest fan before, you know, about the history before 1970, and then it looks a bit different to the one that they're talking about, saying, you know, European Cups and all that. It was they were a nothing club before then, and you know, we were big in the 30s and 40s, but that history somehow doesn't count. But you know, do you know what I mean? It's just it's all semantics. It's all childish. So you know, we're a selling club, and a wiser person than me has said that apart from five clubs in the world, probably everyone's a selling club. It is the way of the world, and we are a selling club because it helps balance our books. We're a selling club because it helps us with meeting our FFP obligations. We're a selling club because it makes us self-sustainable, and we're a selling club because it allows us to bring in more talent, and that's what excites the owner and the DOFs and allows us to kind of regenerate and improve. This season was always a car crash. You know, we've said it 100 times. You take Ivan Toney out of that team, and it is as good as it can possibly be under the circumstances. Then you take out Rico Henry. Then you take out Brian Mbeumo. Then you lose our best goalkeeper, and the one that comes in is a bit at the moment still. Then you lose Hickey. Then you lose
Jensen.
Then you lose Norgard for a bit. Then you lose. Do you know what I mean? It's been constant. So this season is if we can just get nearer the halfway line, halfway point in the table, then it's been all that we can expect it to be in the circumstances. Now we are starting to fill big gaps. As I said, now we've got a proper number three while Rico's out. Now we've got our first choice number nine. Now we need to get Sharda back to fill the number 10 gap. Then we've still got Morpay, you know, who's probably going to be an impactor from the subs bench. Now we've got KLP hopefully in a little bit of form. And now we've got Aya back. And then we've got, you know, our defenders looking strong. And we need to get the defence set. So, you know, we've got a lot now of a lot of positives to focus on. And, you know, more importantly, our head coach, Thomas Frank, he's got more options. You know, he can now start fielding a strongest 11 for whoever we play, not just the only 11 of fit players he's got.
Okay. And listen, I know I keep bringing it back to this as well. We're talking about, you know, you would like to have sort of said, you know, how sorry he was to the fans, okay, but then maybe that wasn't directed to him. But what is interesting is he talked about how painful it is for his family, because he talked about the fact that his family comes and watch him every week, and all of a sudden, no, that's not going to happen anymore. And so he did realise how it's affected the kind of match-going people, which is the family is obviously very close to him. He did also mention the fans as well, how the fans have been supportive of Thomas Frank, the players, the chef, like, you know what I'm saying, has been supporters as well. So I'm just wondering as well here that, to me, it seems that I think that he kind of seems to have kind of realised the effect it's had from people in the stands. And also, still, he has been getting support from people in the stands. Yeah, there's been other people that have been going, I'm not really happy. You know, and everyone's entitled to their opinion. And I can understand why people are getting frustrated and unhappy. And we've talked about it on this show where we're sort of, you know, especially when we're going through a period where there's games that we know that we could have won if he's on the pitch. And you sort of think, you know, God, you know, it's also like, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, one of your mates has done something and all of a sudden he's missing for a couple of weeks. And you know that if he was there, you would have tucked right in. You think, oh, God, Charlie, mate, you know, you're so out of order, man. You know, it's so frustrating. And it's kind of that moment, you know, we're all human beings. And so you've got that human being moment where you sort of think, oh, if you just sorted it, you know. So there's that going on. But I think he does actually realise that, because it's affected people in his house who used to go down the motorway to go and see him.
But we'd know if the interview had asked the follow-up question was there. You know, he failed to answer that, the right follow-up question. He didn't answer it. He didn't ask it. You know, he spoke about his family. He should have said, well, while we're talking about, you know, Saturday afternoons being ruined, how about the fans? He didn't ask that question, and it wasn't for Ivan to ask that question himself. You know, I don't think, you know, maybe he wasn't going to volunteer any more information in ways of apologies and opening up. himself. He had to be asked it. He wasn't asked it. So I say that's a failing of the interviewer, not necessarily Ivan. I'd like to have heard the words, but he might have said them if he was asked.
Yeah. I mean, okay. And just finally, I mean, obviously, like I said, Ivan's back this weekend. That means our team, I mean, we're going to talk about, actually, maybe tell you something. Yeah, we'll talk about Ivan, then we'll come off and talk about it. So that means that things are going to change around quite a bit. I mean, obviously, we talked about the fact that he's going to be going straight up front. I mean, he talked about the fact that he might be panting after 30 minutes. He might have to get taken off, which I thought was quite amusing, seeing the fact that he's been training quite hard. And it's actually interesting because, as you know, our mate, the mortgage as well, his son's actually bought a flat. Just behind the ground, actually, and he's been actually watching the closed door games. So he's actually seen quite a lot of Ivan Toney in the last few weeks, actually, playing on the pitch, including, I think, the penalty that he took the other day, and, you know, and I think he got one of the goals, actually, that he scored as well, like, you know what I'm saying? So I haven't seen it myself because he wasn't there, but I think my point is that, you know, Ivan's back, and the excitement is there for the fans and for me anyway, it's now a case of very much just drawing the line and moving forward. Where do you think we can go from here with Ivan in the team? Being honest,
I think we could get to the mid-table. But I think that's kind of the limit of our potential. You know, I think we're quite a few points behind where we would ideally like to be, all of us. I just want to see him start scoring, and I think the rest will follow. You know, it ends up being a bit of a domino effect. You know, he holds the ball up, and he gives us so many more outlets and options than we've got. You know, Neil Maupay is, as I said, I don't want to pile in on the guy because he's scored a few goals recently. You know, he scored a couple of goals. He just isn't Ivan Toney, and then, you know, we can start knocking the ball long again. We can start playing it in behind into channels. Ivan is able to then go out wide, and his passing and his vision, he can spot a pass. It just, a lot of it depends on who else coming in is fit. Is Sharda, how far is Sharda away? Is he going to start on Saturday? Is he still a week or two away? I think the excitement could actually get even more when the team drops on Saturday. So it just allows so much more confidence, Bill. We can go into some of the games, not against the top, you know, not them against the Man Cities or what have you. Just feeling like, you know, it's not like, can we get a point out of this? It's like, well, we should win this. And it gives us our swagger back. And, you know, as I said, I keep saying it, we've missed it all season, and now it's here. I just want to enjoy it.
Okay. And finally, I've got to say, in that interview, he said that he had a target in his head of how many goals he's going to score between now and the end of the season. Now, we're out of all the cups, so we're exactly halfway through. We've played less games than pretty much everybody else, so we've got 19 games to go, right? How many goals do you think Ivan Toney is going to score in those 19 games?
Well, there's two things there, isn't there? I thought exactly the same. And the number I think he's got in his head, I reckon he's got the number 12 in his head.
Ooh.
I think he set himself a target of 12. Now, he ain't going to share that, is he?
No.
If we can get 9 or 10 out of him, I think that will see us well clear.
Okay. So interestingly, because if he's 12, that means he's going better than last season, because that means he would have got 24 goals, and he got 20 goals last season. So that means he's going better. I'm improving. You know what I'm saying? We've got a scenario where, you know, we're going to have to see him hit the ground running, you know, if he's going to get anything like that. So he's going to have to come out of the first match, and he's going to have to score. Okay. And normally we expect people to kind of have one or two games to warm up. So it's going to depend on how he looks in that first game. Me personally, I was thinking that he had a figure of 10 in his head. So 10 goes in, which it matches the last season. And last season was a very good season for him. And also the fact that he's got this little warm-up time with one or two games. So that's almost like pushing himself ahead. So for me, if he gets 10 goals, I think it'll be absolutely magnificent. But the last question, and the very last question I'm going to ask you on the Ivan Toney, what team, considering, you know, our next few sets of fixtures, is he going to score his first goal against?
Oh, not in the Forest. I mean, I'm I
don't say you're going to put money on it.
I'm not putting money on it, no. Yeah. The irony of betting on Ivan Toney after he's coming back from the betting ban is not lost on me. But I think he'll score, whether it's from a penalty spot or not. I think he'll score on Saturday.
Okay. I think he's going to score on Saturday as well. So let's just see how that goes. Like I said, he's going to play at 5:30 kickoff. The game's on TV. Fans will be getting down there very early. Get down there, might do a little bit of a queue run as well. Laney's going to be doing some sort of Cambodian run. But I might even pop down to Richmond as well, as we do, because it's an early game. Let's just see how that goes. Very much looking forward to that. So anyway, we talked about Ivan Toney, one player who's coming back in the side. It's like a new player, which is lovely. Also, we've got another new player in our side. We've got left-back Reguilon, who is playing on the side, and we've got a recognised left back in the side. It's funny because you get a recognised left back in the side and then people start moaning saying, "Oh, he's not very good, he can't defend," you know what I'm saying? It's like you can't lose, you can't win, can you? But the fact is that he's got a bit of a record. He's played for a few clubs, hasn't he, Laney?
One or two, Bill, yeah. Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid, Seville, Tottenham and Manchester United. I think most of those clubs would probably agree that he can defend. We do need experience in that position. And having watched his interview as well on the Brentford website, what a nice guy he seems to be. He seems to be a really down to earth, really likeable young player. And I won't say that I've obviously paid too much attention to him of late, because I never really thought we'd be in the market for him. I never even thought he'd be interested in coming to us. But we've done really well to persuade him that his career needs that as well. He needs regular starts. He needs to knuckle down. He needs to get in a team that he can excel in. And Brentford will allow him to do that ahead of what probably is a move to another club in the summer. Maybe he'll stay, but I think it's a really good opportunity. It's better that we get experience in than an untried rookie for the future. I think, you know, as you said, you know, if there's some fans moaning about this, I'm not quite sure who that they would want in realistically. Of players that we heard of or we've heard of or know anything about, his pedigree and his list of teams he's played for speaks for themselves. He should come in and be able to do more than a good job, and certainly it's an improvement on what we've been having to deal with over the last couple of months. So, you know, yeah, he may not be Rico, but there's only one Rico, and I'm hoping he comes back strong for next season. But in the meantime, I'm looking forward to seeing Sergio Reguilon.
All right, and the reality is, I mean, because I know a lot of people are sort of pointing out our record and the fact that we lost sort of 6 out of 7 or 7 out of 8 or 8 out of 9 or whatever, but basically we lost a lot of games, okay? And again, you know, again, me, I keep saying it's not a rose-tinted glasses thing, but you look at basically how the team's playing. Yes, they've been losing a little bit of confidence recently, because when you don't win, you do lose a bit of confidence. And also you're looking at, you know, who you've got up front, and if they're not scoring, you know, you have a little bit of confidence. But the thing is, we have been creating the opportunities. And I know a lot of people laugh, especially the Forest fans, go, "Oh, yeah, spreadsheet wankers." But, you know, the fact is that if you create the opportunities, mate, then you're always going to be in the game. The danger is if you're not creating them high chance opportunities, okay, then you're relying on basically own goals. You're relying on somebody shooting from 40 yards. And yeah, it might be great, it might go in the back of the net. I've been creating them, haven't been delivering them. The worry has been in our defence, right? That's been the worry, because we've been letting in such stupid goals, right? And such soft goals, and just doing things which technically we shouldn't be doing. And that's because we're playing, you know, an attacking midfielder at right back, you know what I'm saying? Or bringing in somebody, you know, as a wing back who isn't quite necessarily, you know, up for that position. And you can see that opposition teams have been targeting us 100%. I mean, how many times have they put the ball across long, deep onto the other side, and then player comes in, bang, and back of the net, right? You know, and he's not being tracked properly, right? Because person in that position, and, you know, those goals aren't necessarily, and this is what I'm trying to say to you, Laney, those goals aren't necessarily scored on the left-hand side. They might be scored on the right-hand side, but maybe the person on the right-hand side isn't quite the standard that maybe that they could be, and they've noticed a weakness in that. But that person who's playing on the right-hand side wouldn't be playing in that game if the person in the left-hand side wasn't injured or out of the game. Now what we've done is that we've actually kind of brought Reguilón in, who is also not an experienced left-back, but then he's going to enable us to be able to play players, stronger players in the positions that they should be playing in. So for me, this is a massive thing. It's bigger than the striker thing. Ivan Toney, like I said to you, is good, but you know, we have been scoring goals. You know, we've just been letting in goals. And so for me, tightening up that defence, getting defenders coming back, getting Aya coming back as well. He played against Wolves as well. He's been missed, you know, getting other players back in. Ben Mee coming back in, so he's within the framework. So all of a sudden, you've actually got more defenders. Beforehand, like I said to you, we were actually kind of playing our, was it fifth and sixth and seventh, was it, sort of our choice defenders, you know, in our defence, which is kind of like, oh, blimey, this is like, you know, this is Premier League, so we've got to struggle. So I think Reguilón being in is going to actually be a bigger thing than Ivan Toney coming back.
I don't know about bigger, but I know I do know what you mean. It should be a better balanced back five, back four, and you know, we should be able to have more confidence in that person to kind of excel in a role that is made his own at other big clubs, you know. So, you know, and it's one of those situations as well where, you know, if we let two in at the back, you know, are we really going to score three? Now we've got Ivan back, and knowing, you know, how prolific he can be, there's a good chance that we can score two, we can score three if we're creating those chances. So what was happening was we were getting punished by our mistakes at the back and having to take all our opportunities at the other end of the pitch. You know, going back at this poor run, I still say there's only one of those games, the Wolves match on the 28th of December, where we were kind of like really out of it. You know, the other matches we may have lost, but we always felt that we were in it or could have got something more out of it. You know, the Villa game, we could have got at least a point out of that. Crystal Palace away, we created chances. Sheffield United, we just looked dead. That was just flat. We're just running out of steam. So it's the shot. We got shots in the arms and shots in the leg coming. We've got adrenaline rushes coming. There's energy now coming into that team where it was kind of just like literally going through the motions. And you know, you look back at some of those defensive performances and it looks shambolic at times. So we just need to get organised and, as you say, putting square pegs in square holes. It does help.
Yeah. And just coming back to the Reguilón as well, you know, a lot of people sort of saying, oh, you're great up front, you know, not sure about his defensive ability. I mean, obviously, like, he's a half decent defender because he's played for some decent teams. But the fact is that one thing that we have been missing is the Rico Henry effect. Rico was very, very good at adding to our attack, instigating attacks. Okay, his speed, bringing the ball up, you know, that was a massive thing for us. And we missed that as well. Reguilón, excellent dribbler of the ball, okay, getting the ball up, crossing the ball in, actually an excellent crosser of the ball as well. So you know, this can bringing back Brentford back into this attacking game that we've kind of been missing, you know, taking the ball out from the back, bringing the ball out and actually getting your fullbacks to actually kind of add to the attack. So this, for me, I think it's going to be a big part of Brentford's kind of DNA coming back for us. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it will pan out against Forrest. You know, it's very early days for us. He's only been in for a couple of days, probably doesn't even know half the players' names. So it might take a little bit of a time to get into it. But this, for me, is a really positive thing because we also do kind of like attack as the best form of defence, you know, with our defenders. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, and, you know, what Reguilón said in his interview was how impressed he was that Thomas Frank knew his game inside out. You know, he was aware of, you know, intimately of his strengths and how best to use him, and that was part of the reason he wanted to come. I think there would have been other offers for him, but I think the Thomas Frank effect sat down and probably got him really excited about joining, you know, something that's something like a Brentford project. I think footballers are kind of intrigued, and I think he really can come here and flourish. And yeah, it may not work, Bill. I mean, let's be honest, you know, there's a chance, you know, it might not, but I'm certainly not going to start that. It's my, you know, that's not my starting position. It's just that, you know, there's no reason not to be excited about someone with that kind of experience coming. Unfortunately, or hopefully he doesn't fall to the Brentford injury jinx that seems to be going on at the moment.
Yeah, that's right. We got the we talked on our little podcast before Wolves, okay? The the super kid, the wonder kid, who we just got in. We haven't heard it officially as yet, but apparently he's injured already, isn't he? The Turkish wonder kid, Laney.
Yes. Yeah. Apparently, yeah, his Turkish Twitter feed saying he's ruptured a tendon or something in his leg. So hopefully that isn't the case, but we'll see.
Now, for 4 or 5 months is what the rumour is, but, you know, again, that's not been confirmed. We haven't had time to do the due diligence as we do normally with Besotted, like I said. Just last thing on Reguilon as well, you know, we talked about his attacking side as well. Very, very aggressive as well, defensive. I mean, I think when he signed for La Liga, he was the third ranked duels contested in La Liga as well, you know, fifth in ball recovery, fifth best in ball recovery, eighth best in aerial duels as well. Like, you know, ground success, our duel success rate wasn't quite as good, but you know what I'm saying, so we've got that side of it as well, because obviously he is a defender. So like I said to you, good little balance, and like I said, it adds on what we've got already, so which is all good. So listen, looking forward to those two players adding to our squad on Saturday. So we're going to talk about games that are coming up and games that are gone. We're just going to talk about our trip to Wolves, and also we're going to talk about Nottingham Forest coming down to New Griffin Park. So Wolverhampton Wanderers in the cup, we're out of the cup. Forest are in the cup, actually. They played a game a day after us against up at Blackpool, okay, and it went to extra time, and it went to the very end of extra time, and they actually got the win in the end. So they're in the cut and we're not in the hat, so we've got a weekend off. But the positive about that game, again, you know, okay, the positive is that we played very well. Okay, we scored some goals. The negative is, again, as per usual, we couldn't hold a lead. And even though we went we went ahead a couple of times, eventually Wolves came back and they got the winner in time added on. It was a penalty. There's an argument to say, but there's one thing I was a little bit gutted, because you sort of think, actually we missed out on a cup run. But then you look at the season we've got, you think, actually, do we need extra games this season with the players that we've got out? And maybe we need to focus. So maybe it was a blessing in disguise. What was more important, though, is players getting good game time, players playing good matches. You know, again, we were, you know, by the time we got our subs on, we were struggling for people to come on by that stage. You know, we had people that were out, Ethan Pinnock was out, and, you know, just various people were actually not on, you know, were actually not in that game. And the fact is that also you're thinking, God, we're playing Forest on Saturday. Do we want to go into extra time? Do we need these players kind of, you know, just knackering themselves out? So in retrospect, like I said to you, good game, really good game of football. Didn't quite get the result, but at the end of the day, the focus really is all on the Forest game.
Yeah, it is. I think most Brentford fans would agree that the team did better than most of us thought they would. To go ahead twice, I think it was great to see the redemption of Nathan Collins, who scored. You know, he had an absolute stinker, didn't he, at the GTEC on the 28th of December in the 4-1 victory to Wolves. He literally gifted them two goals. So he got one back for there, and then he had one disallowed. Right near the end, which, you know, VAR, there was a bit of controversy about VAR. Apparently, you know, there was only one camera angle rather than the usual different camera angles, and their penalty, it looked very, very weak. And I you know, they didn't overturn it. They went with the on-field decision, but I don't think they would have given that as a penalty if the referee hadn't already given it himself. I don't think they could see them enough to sort of rule it out or overturn it. But it looked very, very light. And you look at the reaction of the Brentford players, they were outraged by that. So it's probably stopped the tie going to penalties. What would have happened then, God only knows. But yeah, I mean, I know what you mean. You know, when you're in a situation like ours, the FA Cup seems to it's a bit whatever, isn't it? I mean, I don't think you ever want us to go out, but you know, I don't think it's a disaster. It's one competition where we can't sustain any more injuries. So if we do get any more now, it's going to be in league games, which is going to be less galling than, you know, we're not going to win the FA Cup this year, are we? You know, it's quite obvious we're not strong enough. So it's probably better to be out of it. I would like us to go hardcore for the FA Cup at one stage. I think, you know, us being this strong, but maybe it's next year, maybe it's the year after, if we can stay in the top flight, we'll be building towards something, I think. But it just goes back to the, you know, this time last year, we were probably thinking if we hadn't got into the European places last year, this was the year to go for it. But we've just been derailed on every turn. So I'm not surprised we're out of it. I would have, any of us would have been going up to West Brom? Probably not. Maybe.
I was looking forward to that. Get the vine, mate. Get the vine. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, what's unusual is watching these games on telly. I'm so used to being there, home and away, year in year out. To miss a couple of games has been a bit weird. But c'est la vie. I'll be back and I'll be home and away for the rest of the season once I am.
So talking about Wolverhampton Wanderers, talking about looking forward, talking about Ivan Toney coming. Listen, someone always lightens up the load. We've got JB in the house. JB's going to give us a little bit more facts and a little bit more bunk.
Are you ready for this? I told you it was coming.
Who?
JB. And he's ready to stock it to you one time. Get it.
Hello, Jonathan Burchell back again. So there'll be no trip to Wembley for another season, and no Brentford ribbons on the FA Cup. The nearest we've ever been is the sixth round, on four occasions. Although before our 1938 sixth round appearance, we were actually the bookies' favourite to lift the cup. Of the 320 FA Cup matches we've now played, only seven have been decided in extra time, with just two of those seeing us progress through to the next round. The last time the added 30 minutes decided our fate was in December 2012, when Uwe Rosler's Bees went from 1-1 after 90 minutes to a 4-2 win against Bradford City, in front of a crowd of just 2,643 at Griffin Park. The last defeat in extra time was in December 1982, when Fred Callaghan's side lost 3-1 at Swindon. And for fans of that era, a game which will always be remembered as the one where centre-forward Tony Mahoney broke his leg. Neil Maupay's goal against Wolves, 7 minutes after the break, finally brought an end to an unwanted run. We hadn't scored a goal in the second half of any of our previous six games. Full focus is now on the league, and we go into this weekend's game with half the season now played. For Saturday's lineup, we will be without Johan Wisser. He had been involved in our last 83 Premier League games, starting 46 and 37 coming off the bench. Not only was that the longest run for us, it was also the longest current run for any player in the Premier League. Saturday will, of course, see the long-awaited return of Ivan Toney, who scored in his last appearance at the GTEC back in April. Coincidentally, against Nottingham Forest.
So, talk about home. Nottingham Forest are coming to our home on Saturday. 5:30 kickoff it's going to be. The Forest fans, they're actually screwing at the moment now because they've been pulled up on FFP. We discussed this, quite a few times on this podcast as well. And like I said to you, we discussed on our podcast our confusion as to, like, you know, we're sitting there going, every time they bought a player, we just couldn't understand how they can keep on buying players. They bought more and more and more and more and more players, and it just kind of just seemed to go on. And we're just thinking, do the rules not apply? And then bang. They've just happened. Obviously, it's a three-year cycle, and the rules are being applied to them. And Forest have been done for breaching FFP rules. And I know a lot of people, and we talked about it, have talked about Man City and Chelsea. Listen, we know they've done stuff, and they need to be sorted out as well. But, you know, our view is, you know, and this is not a disrespect on the fans themselves. We're just talking about football clubs. Football clubs, listen, these are the rules, right? We had to pay by the rules. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, we had to fight against Derby Counties and your other clubs, you know, in the Championship, who are throwing bucket loads of money, which would have stopped you getting the Premier League if they'd got in there. And it's like, is that really fair? Because if you're not playing by the rules. So listen, you've got to play by the rules. And if you ain't play by the rules, then things kind of just come to roost, as they say. So not just disrespecting the fans, the Forest fans as such, but we're just kind of just saying, look, it is what it is. And sometimes you get away with it and sometimes you don't. And it seems like the Premier League are obviously they've basically get such a hammering because they seem to get everything wrong. You know what I'm saying? So they seem to have tightened up a little bit, and Forest and Everton seem to be the clubs that have been sort of kind of victim up, or they're tightening up so they don't keep getting an absolute bollocking in the Premier League for completely and utterly sort of screwing things up and having one rule for one and run for the rule for the next. Nottingham Forest coming down. We've talked about them a lot, but tell you what, I'm going to go to Forest. I'm going to go to Scott Ealy, and he's going to give us the lowdown on Nottingham Forest. I'm going to have a little chinwag with him about Forest and their situation and them coming down to New Griffin Park. D-Day, big day, Saturday. Brentford at home. The return of Ivan Toney. The revealing of Reguilon. There's all sorts going on Saturday. 5:30 kickoff, so plenty of time to get down the pub before the game.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Get yourself right potty for it. And I've got someone on the line here who's up in the Midlands who's completely and utterly potty for it. Scott Ealy, Munich, Madrid.
How are we doing, Phil?
Not bad, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. It's been a difficult week, but we're all right.
Yeah, I've heard you've been out this morning. You've been out this morning. People have been out spending this morning. Is that right?
Well, you know, that's how we go in the East Midlands. We like to spend the money, and don't worry too much about what happens further down the line.
There you go, mate. You know what I'm saying? Well, hopefully you've actually kind of done a bit of calculations and make some amends. You know, you're probably going to sell a few of them photographs behind you to try and sort it out. Is that right?
Well, to be honest, we could probably do borrowing. Give me a crash course on Excel. I think that's what we need in Nottingham, particularly the accountants. Get those spreadsheets out. It can't be that hard, can it?
That's right. Well, you know, the spreadsheet winkers up here in Brentford will be able to sort you right out with that anyway, which is all good. But like I said to you, listen, Forest man in the house. So listen, I'm going to ask you that before. Let's just forget about what's happened the last few days. Your season so far, just tell us about it. Has it been a good season?
I would say it's been disappointing, I think. Obviously, Steve Cooper kind of held on to his job by the skin of his teeth, really, in terms of the pressure that was coming from the ownership. It wasn't coming, you know, from the fan base. I think there's a degree of reality there. Obviously, there was a massive turnover in playing staff when we got promoted. So he did, really, a magnificent job, even though the season had been a struggle. To think actually, I mean, I think it's fairly unprecedented to have signed that many players and to get them playing to the point where, you know, we were able to stay up, you know, in the Premier League. And we, you know, we had some big results over the course of that season. You know, we beat Liverpool, we got a good point at Man City, and obviously beat Arsenal just before the last day to keep us up. So it was brilliant. But we knew that the expectation was going to change over the summer. You know, we did sign some good players. That's what we needed. But again, you know, it's this scattergun approach where there's probably too many that came in. And I think Steve Cooper probably struggled with, I think, the reality of the Premier League once you're in it. That actually what comes with wages, what comes with fees, players coming from overseas, was very different to what Steve Cooper found when he took over Forest, that he had a number of homegrown players, some players that were underachieving, and he got a real tune out of them and fully invested in the football club and the vision and uniting the fan base, which was the, you know, which was the huge job. But yeah, it's not quite clicked. Obviously, we started fairly well, actually. But then he couldn't figure out his best team. And then results started to dwindle to the point where I think you could see the new players weren't invested in what he was trying to do. The style of play, the counter-attacking game, cat and mouse, was actually, we've got better players now to be doing better in influencing games. And I think as that started to dwindle, obviously the results were not acceptable. I think it was 13 without a win. You know, it wasn't acceptable. And personally, I think it had just ran its course, unfortunately. I think it had just ran its course, and it was no slight on Steve Cooper. I think just with the changes and the success that he had almost immediately, it kind of caught up with him, really.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, I mean, we've got a little bit of beef with Steve Cooper, as you're probably well aware. And, you know, Cooper himself, Brentford fans, and that goes back to his days at Swansea. Okay, when he was at Swansea, and there's various things that happened in the first playoff season with Cooper, him and Thomas Frank, you know, it all kicked off a little bit. And since then it went off with them and then the Swansea fans. And when he went to Forest, there's always a little bit of, oh God, I can't believe he's got to Forest. Like I'm saying, because now, you know, we're going to have to take that onto Forest. So in a way, sort of a lot of Brentford fans are probably quite glad that he's actually left Forest to a certain extent. But you really loved him, didn't you?
Yeah, and I think, you know, Forrest had been at the Premier League for so long, and for a fan that's been going for, you know, since I was a, you know, 6-7 year old, you know, once the Brian Clough legacy had gone and we managed to kind of do a little bit in the Premier League with Frank Clark, but it's been kind of mission impossible. And the biggest, I think one of the biggest issues is actually being able to unite the fan base. And if anything, that's what Steve Cooper succeeded in, where many, you know, numerous amount of managers had failed. That he got the club and he got the fans, and you know, all the right things were coming out in, you know, his interviews, very honest, but there was a lot of things going on behind the scenes in the city that he was doing that, you know, people were getting wind of. Always had time for people, been lucky enough to kind of have a chat with him, and it was just very informal and just a nice guy, very grounded. Obviously, he's Paul Smith clubber. Paul Smith is made in Nottingham, so all the clothing that he would wear was, you know, that was all kind of coming from Nottingham. And very much, you know, working with the young players, you know, your Ryan Yates, your Joe Worrells, your Brennan Johnsons. These are kids that have been at Forest since they were, you know, 6-7 years old. And to see them develop, I think, as people, you know, not just as players as well, but to see those young people, you know, develop. Just to be really grounded young men, and it's just lovely to be a part of that. And obviously we got up, and he has given us a day that we will never forget. You know, that's football, isn't it? You look back, and yes, it's all about the here and now, but you know, you have to remember those special times, and Steve Cooper gave us that, and he will forever be a Forest legend. And sometimes the word legend is banded about, but actually what Steve Cooper achieved in that time, he will go down in Forest folklore, you know, no doubt.
Yeah, and interesting, because I mean, I spoke to you about Cooper when he started, and I said to you, you know, not only the beef side of things, but I said to him about, you know, the footballing style that he played, especially with Swansea, which we thought, you know, we weren't down with it at all. But interestingly, the Swansea fans who loved him the first season, but by the time they lost in the second playoff, they were also kind of sick of him and the football that he was playing as well. And I think, I mean, Forest fans, when he came over to you, you know, forget us, because obviously there's a little bit of beef here, you might not believe us, but the Swansea fans did kind of warn you. A lot of the things that you talked about at the back end where it's going a little bit wrong, you were warned about it sort of kind of, you know, 2 or 3 years before, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, I did speak with a Swansea fan, you know, just as he was being appointed, and he was saying the same thing, that actually the football wasn't, you know, it wasn't good. And you know, I don't think they were too disappointed really that he went. But I think what he had at Forest was, you know, we were bottom of the Championship in 2021, and the only way was to go up. And you know, I think sometimes it's about the players that you've got, and we had some quite dynamic players, and you know, in Jed Spence, we had James Garner, Brennan Johnson, so. I think it suited him, you know, Philip Zinchenko was in there. So he had some good forward players. And obviously in the Championship, they, you know, they were very good Championship players. And obviously that was proof in the pudding that we got promoted. So I think for me, as that season went on and we kind of started to get into the playoffs, his approach started to become a bit more cautionary. And I think that showed in the semi-finals against Sheffield United. And then obviously the final wasn't a good spectacle. You know, we won 1-0 and, you know, it wasn't great football. So we kind of started to see that, I think. And then obviously in the Premier League, with all those new players, I think he was probably right to kind of adapt that approach. You know, we couldn't go toe-to-toe with people because we were just going to get picked off. So it was very much about that siege mentality. But I think that's only sustainable for so long in the Premier League. And, you know, he did figure that out. We got Morgan Gibbs-White playing, but it was very patchy, I think. You know, Forrest probably performed for 10, 20 minutes playing good football, but the rest of it really was back to the wall. Ball retention wasn't good. Too many sideways passing. The passing wasn't quick enough. And I think that has just caught up with him, to be honest. And, I guess probably that resistance to change and take the shackles off a little bit just caught up with him.
Yeah, so Forest, Premier League, you know, listen, it's always a great achievement. You've gone up there, big celebrations, but you obviously know first season is going to be really tough. And I know that you were finding it tough that first season, and I chatted to you a lot. I spoke to Greg from Forza Garibaldi, and, you know, and I sort of kind of gave him my experience of being in the Premier League the first season, you know. And I think that maybe because you're in the Championship and you kind of expect bang bang, we've won, you win every week, then you have a loss, you get disappointed. I said it's almost the exact opposite way around here, and you've got to just kind of literally eke out the points. You look at the games that you think you're going to win, right, and then you squeeze out a point here and there, then you might get a win here and there. There's certain games that you think that you should win, maybe with teams in and around you, but then the key is when you get a result which is completely out of the blue. I said that's the one. So you cannot in this league sit down and say we are going to do X, Y, and Z, because it doesn't work like that, because you don't know that you're going to go and beat Man City, you know, when you shouldn't do, or you're going to go and beat Arsenal when you shouldn't do. You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of where it went. So it's almost like for the first 6 months, or for the first 4 months, you were like struggling and you're like going, we can't see the end out of this. And then the second 4 months, or then you kind of took a slightly different attitude on things and realised actually we got to be a little bit more practical about our approach in here in this division if we're going to survive. And then you got some big results towards the back end of the season.
Yeah, I think it was very much like that. I think the first 2 months were tough. We got to not a bad start, but then it was kind of all downhill. We got hammered 4-0 at Leicester, and it was kind of like, is he going to go then? But, you know, fair play to the owner that he kept hold of him. And then just going into just before the international break, that came at a bad time for us because we moved out the relegation place. I think we'd moved up to 16th. We just beat Palace at home. And then obviously we had the international break, and that kind of knocked that momentum, took the wind out of the sails. Fully enough, you know, Jesse Lingard was actually starting to come into some form around that time. But he was injured when we came back. He got injured at Man United, and then he barely played, you know, from that point. So I think that momentum didn't help. And then we signed, well, our transfer windows are always a mixed bag. So Danilo, what a cracking signing he was. Felipe from Atletico Madrid, Navas, great signings. But then we had Chris Wood and Jonjo Shelvey to kind of to see that on the other foot. So it was a struggle towards the end of the season, but, you know, they found the belief and they stayed up when it looked like they were going to go down. So it was a great achievement. But, you know, as a fan now, you do go to those games thinking anything pretty much can happen. And every point is a good point. I see it in the Premier League. You know, if you can pick up a point, it's still a good point because you know that others are going to be finding the same kind of issues. So, funnily enough, you know, the away form was terrible last season. The atmosphere has been fantastic at Forest, probably the best I've ever experienced, you know, and that's been through the Clough days, you know, unbelievable, you know, the atmosphere. And that got us some good results against big clubs. And, you know, I think we lost to Brentford last year with the dodgy penalty and the sending off of Henderson. Or was it 2-0? Did we scab one in injury time? I think we might have done. Yeah. I can't remember, but... But yeah, it's kind of, we've been a bit of a funny team and we just haven't got that consistency. And you can't go into a new season thinking, right, we'll get a point against Man City, we'll beat Liverpool at home. It just doesn't work that way, you know, in terms of a consistent pattern. So, you know, this season we beat Aston Villa 2-0 at home and, you know, pretty much played them off the park. And it was, we're just a funny team.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, you're talking about, you know, playing people off the park. You're talking about, you know, it's interesting, you're talking about Wood, you know, and all the other players that come in. Listen, we can't, you know, listen, it's the elephant in the room now, isn't it? You know, we've got to talk about, you know, Forest and their signings, because it is actually something that has really confused us. We sit here on this podcast, we talk about it on the Besotted podcast sort of quite a bit, because we sit down there and we come to a transfer window and then you're just like racking up the signings. And we're sitting there going, I don't understand. How's this happening? Because we know that there's rules in place, but it's almost like you're sort of kind of just spending for fun and just kept on spending. And we just thought maybe the rules are different in the Premier League, or maybe it doesn't really matter, or maybe you're doing something very clever that we didn't know about. Then all of a sudden, bang, you know, the chickens have come to roost. You know, a few days ago, you know, a few weeks ago, they said it looks like Forest may be in, or, you know, football sustainability, FFP, trouble, you know, something that we all know very much about coming from the Championship, because you've got teams in the Championship who basically they want the big money. They want to go up to the Premier League. So they're thinking, look, you know, we're getting what, 2 million, 3 million, 6 million pound a year TV money in the Championship, but we can get 150 million a year if we get Premier League. So if we go and spend loads of money and buy all the best players, then we're going to go up. So they take the gamble. You know, your Derby County is your favourite club. They did it. You know, Sheffield Wednesday did it. There are other clubs that have done it, and they've got themselves into an absolute pickle because it doesn't work like that. And they've got themselves in trouble. Sheffield Wednesday, as you can see, they're just reeling. You know, Derby County, they can't hardly win a game in Division One, which you're, like I said, you're probably very happy about, you know. But the fact is that, you know, when you're sitting there as a club, as Brentford are sitting there as a club, and we're not getting our high horse, and me and Laney talk about this on the podcast, you know, this actual podcast, you're trying to do things the way that, inverted commas, it's meant to be done, right? You've only got a certain pot of money. We're only a small club, so we can only buy and sell players in a particular way. You know, our owner, yeah, he's got money, but he's not going out and been buying everyone, you know, lock, stock and two smoking barrels. We just got to do it your way. Now, if you're doing it the right way, you're expecting everyone around it to do the same thing. And we used to get a little bit disappointed with Derby County when they didn't, because you're thinking, you're cheating and we're doing things the right, and you're going to probably go up and get the money and we're not, because you're doing things that way. So you've got to see it as well from a fan's perspective, not having to go at you as a fan, but as other clubs when they don't kind of do things the right way, you know? So I just don't understand. You know, you said that you were out of players, but the spending that you did was ridiculous. You've got to admit that.
Well, I think he's kind of trying to put it into context. So I think when Forest knew that in terms of the Championship, the spending wasn't sustainable, that started to happen really under Sabri Lamouchi. So when he came in, there wasn't a big budget. There weren't any really big signings, and we had to kind of get on with what we already had. There was no big transfers going on. We got so far with that, you know, it's a bit similar to Steve Cooper, exceeded expectations, but blobbed it at the kind of the last minute in the playoffs. Chris Hughton came in again, not really any massive kind of money spent. And then particularly in that summer where we started, you know, again, Forest were well in FFP and Championship in terms of those losses. But when you go to that team that was struggling at the start of the season, Steve Cooper's obviously got a tune, brought those loans in. So again, not big transfers spent. It was, you know, loan fees to get us up. And actually, there's an argument that probably we went up too quickly. But, you know, what do you do in terms of that? Because the issue that Forest had in that summer was that those loan players all went back. So Jed Spence, Philip Zinkernagel, James Garner, Keenan Davis. And there's another one that I can't think of at the minute, but there was a fifth. And then Brees Samba, a goalkeeper, he left, and Lewis Graben, Joe Lolly. So you're thinking Forest is 11. You take those eight players out of that kind of squad, Forest were down to bare bones. So they did have to go and sign a lot of players. Now, whatever the 25, 26 did go too far, but there was definitely a need to spend that money. And I don't know the ins and outs of financial fair play, but if you're getting revenue of 150 million guaranteed, then Forest had not spent over 150 million. Actually, we'd not really made... Morgan Gibbs-White was our biggest signing of 35 million, which I would have thought was a 20 million plus add-ons. And then everybody else, you know, Wanyi was kind of 18 million, Mangala 15 million. And then really, there weren't any massive expenditure beyond that.
Sangare.
Problem. Go on.
Sangare as well.
Sangare was bought this summer. Okay. So on the back of, you know, Brennan Johnson or whatever. So Sangare was the player that we brought in kind of this summer. So at the end of the day, Forest had gone up and had to spend money to stay up because, yes, you could go into the mindset of, right, we can't spend X, Y, and Z, and we get relegated. I was personally worried that if we're not strengthened that squad, we would have beat Derby County's record of 11 points. So, of getting relegated, worst team in history. So, we definitely had to do that. But the problem Forest have got and had for a long time, that they have been too many players being brought in with no impact. Okay, so Loic Badé, I think that's how you pronounce his name, was at Forest last summer. Sold to Seville, not kicked a ball, sold to Seville in January. They're now talking £60-70 million kind of for him. And there was a few others that we'd signed and they just don't go anywhere. And some of these players we sign on long contracts and we don't move them on. And that's Forest's biggest problem. Now, what's symptomatic of that at the moment is we've got five goalkeepers on contract in the first team squad. And we can't, even Horvath and Wayne Hennessy should have been moved on in the summer and they haven't been. And they're not kicking a ball, they're not doing anything. And if we're talking about things that are impacting on financial fair play, this is the problem of Forest have got. They've got too many players and these wages are just adding up. John Joe Shelby played about three games and was completely sacked off, but he was on £75,000 a week. So absolutely.
Lingard, you've got Lingard as well, and you've got the Lingards. I mean, the thing is, Lingard.
So Lingard was, at the time, you could see it, because he'd had a good season at West Ham. So he looked, he looked a fairly good signing, but it took him a while to get going. He had a good patch, and then he was injured. So he'd been a great cheerleader, £80,000 a week, the world's most expensive cheerleader. You could see that togetherness of what he was bringing to the club behind the scenes. But the problem is that, we're just too many players. And I don't think Forest have fallen foul of transfer fees. What Forest have fallen foul of having too many players, I don't think we have breached the FFP rules by that much, because obviously the mitigating circumstances that we've, since then sold Brennan Johnson, which has then brought us back in within financial fair play. And I think this is the argument that Forest are
going to put across. Yeah, but there's a period. And you're sold outside the period. If you sold within the period, you might have just made it. But the fact is, the rules are the rules, and other teams have had to do it. And they've had to sell players within the period, and you kind of got to stick with it. And the irony is, the team that he could have sold him to was the team that had been chasing him for a few years as well, which is Brentford. Which we would have, if you'd taken the £30 million that we'd offered you probably would have come in within FFP. But it's one of those things where you make the decision. And it kind of is what it is. But just coming back to it, and this has been a big discussion, because I know there's sort of things like we may or may not. What I don't understand is that there's 150 mil a year, as you said, in the Premier League. So I'm actually really surprised that anybody gets anywhere near breaching FFP, because there is actually so much money, right? To me, it's not about spending money. People say, the more money to spend, the better your team are. It's not. It's about spending your money wisely, spending it properly. Okay. So, certain teams can do it. They could do a lot with £50 million. Okay. Other teams will probably buy a player and probably won't be able to afford to pay his wages on that money. So, it depends on what you do. So, that I think this is where the issue is, where people trying to kind of water it down a little bit and say, it's not really a big issue. It's kind of like, you've got money. Your owner's obviously got money. We're not even going to go into where that money's come from, because this is the podcast where we just don't want to go there, because some people do know, but we're not going to go there. We'll move on from that one. But he has the ability to spend, right? And he doesn't probably really care. And the rules are whatever they are. And he just probably carried on saying, I don't really care. I've got the money and I'm going to spend it anyway. And just whatever happens, happens. So that's kind of what he's done, but it hasn't quite worked out. But, if you were going to do it the wise way, and this is just me just saying, you would have got somebody in, you would have paid somebody a lot of money. I know you had Andy Scott from Brentford, but I'll be honest with you, he ain't the person that has been doing all the tricks at Brentford, to be quite honest with you. He was one of our ex-managers and we brought him in as a scout who elevated himself after a while, then went off to Swansea with Steve Cooper. But bringing in somebody who's been able to let you actually spend your money in the right way probably would have been better. You're probably better spending £5 million on getting a person like that than spending the money that you did.
Well, I think the issue that we've got, and again, it comes back to the club, is that they've changed recruitment strategies. You know, we had a German guy come in the season that we got promoted, and we signed some players from the Bundesliga. And actually, we signed some good players, but because we had such a poor start in those first few months, the owner got trigger happy and got rid of them. Now, those signings that the guy actually made have actually turned out to be good signings in the long term. But then we brought somebody else in, and that was to do with, you know, the Chris Wood signing, and it's been scattergun. We've got, I think, the owner's son likes to be involved in these big transfers. So I think they're your Navas, your Felipe, your Lingards. He likes that glam around that. But just coming back to the Brennan Johnson point, and something that has come out kind of latterly, and this is something that I'm kind of really interested in, is that it was Brennan Johnson that turned the move down to Brentford. And I'm quite interested to see if Forrest had actually accepted that bid, but it was actually the player that didn't want to go. So again, if that's a mitigating factor that Forrest have accepted that bid to take them out of financial fair play, he was going to go. Brennan wanted to go, and it was clear he was going to go that summer. But that, again, if that's part of the Forrest defence, is that actually we'd agreed a fee, we wanted to sell the player, but the player had kind of turned it down. Now, in terms of sustainability, you're completely right, and we've got to run it better. You can't keep signing that amount of players, and we are just hemorrhaging money in that respect. So we have to work smarter. But, you know, there's a difference. You know, 17.5 million is a big difference. And if we're talking about Forest have sold the family jewels of Brennan Johnson, you know, our best young player, come through the academy, and then do Forest have a moral obligation to that player? That actually, no, we're selling you. You've got to go with a lad that's been there since he was six or seven. So I don't think it is all cut and dried. And yes, the rules are the rules, and we've got to do that. But I don't think these rules are right, to be honest. I don't. And they've got to start. They're talking about ripping them up and starting again in August. So I just don't see the point, really. You know, what is going to be the punishment then this season? Everton have already had theirs. We're getting ours now. But you're going to change the rules again in the summer. So I think the Premier League are tying themselves in knots. This is the most lucrative league in world football. Surely you want clubs to spend as much money as they possibly can. Because I just think, you know, Sheffield United, for instance, I speak to a Sheffield United fan, and he said, we won't sign anybody. He thinks the owners are going to sit on that money and they might sell up. And it's kind of like, well, that's crap. And, you know, you look at who's down there now, that gap is becoming bigger and bigger and bigger because of the financial implications of those clubs coming up. That you've now got Sheffield United, Burnley, and who's the other one?
Sheffield United, Burnley, think. Sheffield Luton. United, Burnley, Luton. Yeah,
so it's kind of like, how on earth are they supposed to compete? I mean, Luton, for instance, it's just mad. So Luton are just going to almost like, if they don't stay up, they've banked 150 million, what do they do with that then? But we talk about football as a dream, and it's almost like you can get so far in football now, but the Premier League kind of curtails you, and it's a bit shit. If anything our owner's been guilty of is being too ambitious and almost sprinkled with some arrogance in there, about we'll get ourselves out of this mess. And it's good that we've been caught out, and I'm hoping that the punishment is not severe enough that effectively it relegates us.
Yeah, I mean, and just coming back to your point quickly, with Brennan Johnson, you could have actually sold in the previous window or the previous window before that as well, which would have helped your situation. And it's about planning as well. And also, you could have just not spent as much money on people.
We're not selling anybody to Brentford.
Well, there you go. And that about sums up. And that's the end of the podcast, ladies and gentlemen. So there you go. Brentford brought down Nottingham Forest is that basically what we came here to talk about. But anyway, listen, let's move forward and let's talk about this game at the weekend, because big game for us. As you know, Ivan Toney's back. We've got Reguilon in the back in our defence. We have been, pretty appalling in defence. We've got some great defenders, but because we must basically just keep on disappearing and getting injured, really been struggling. So that's been tough for us up front. Actually, we've got big players missing. As you know, Boomer's out, Ivan Toney's been out, Sharda's been out, KLP's been out. We've got loads of players in and out. Reece has now gone off to the AFCON, which he did very well actually the other night as well when he played in his game, one old game he scored scored as well, and he probably could have got another goal. But, you know, we've got lots of players out, but we're creating good chances. So we're very excited for Ivan Toney to come back. And we're even more excited for Reguilon to come in and actually, as we say, regulate our defence, because our defence has been completely irregulated over the last couple of months. Nottingham Forest coming down as well. You know, what are you expecting from this game?
Well, I mean, most encouraging is that Forest are moving the ball a lot quicker under Nuno, and definitely playing much better football straight away. That's kind of been plain to see, and having a go. You know, we've not been sitting back and waiting for teams to dominate. We've actually been starting to have a go, which has been quite refreshing, to be honest. So we've got injury issues. Morgan Gibbs-White is a doubt. He's been he's been put in, you know, as a captain now under Nuno, who had him at Wolves as a young player. And Morgan Gibbs-White was really struggling this season, but he's been absolutely fantastic since Nuno came in. So if he's injured, then that's going to be a big miss for Forest, because he has been brilliant. You know, last night it was kind of, you know, they changed the team around, but you know, Chris Wood has actually started to come to some goals. You know, until, you know, the Newcastle game, or actually the first game when he started under Nuno against Bournemouth, that is the best I've seen Chris Wood have, you know, this period. He looks like a different player. It's absolutely mad. I can't believe the change. I was get rid, and he's really surprised me. He just looks a different player. We're playing a different way. We're getting players around him. So that has been a real positive, because I think we're going to have to buy, you know, a striker. But he scored five or six goals now since Nuno came in. So that's been positive. And we'll just have to see kind of where we go. Nico Williams has come in and started playing well. Murillo, our Brazilian centre-half, he's what a find, you know, he is. He's still got some work to do, but on the ball, he's absolutely superb. And, you know, it'll be interesting to know your thoughts on him after Saturday. Hopefully he'll kind of give Toney a decent game. But Murillo looks a real good prospect, to be honest. And then we've got Dominguez in midfield. So Argentinian player, came in for Bologna in the summer, about £8 million. He started really well, but I think under Cooper, he was really struggling. But he's been one who's come straight back into the 11 under Nuno. And he's got a couple of goals and he's playing well. So his confidence is up. So we'll see. I mean, you know, we're still kind of what are Forest going to do? You know, what they're going to play like? Because it's still early days under Nuno. But against Newcastle on Boxing Day, Forest were brilliant. You know, played really well and deserved to win that game.
Yes, and for Brentford, I mean, we're not going to bang on injuries, because every team has injuries. And like I said to you, you know, we've been for years without a glut of injuries. We've, you know, it's been very kind to us, and we kind of knew that we're going to get a year where it's just going to hit us, and it's hit us really hard. I mean, Norgaard is out, who's a massive player for us. You talk about in midfield, so Norgaard being out for us means that, you know, the person who controls that midfield for us is going to be out. So we have ways that we adapt. You know, whether or not Janelt goes in there, I mean, we haven't got Frank the Tank on yet because he's playing for Nigeria out in AFCON. But, you know, so we just have to deal with these things. So we'll see. So it could be quite an exciting game, because there's quite a lot of change with us. There's some change with you. You've got a new manager who's got a different thought pattern on. Thomas Frank is obviously going to be very animated now that he's got Ivan Toney back. Ivan Toney's going to be absolutely, he said it already, he's going to be absolutely potty for it. You know, there's talks in the press when everyone's sort of going on about the fact that he said that he wanted to leave. We've talked about this on the podcast, him saying that he wanted to go to a bigger club, but you have to listen to the whole interview to actually take it into context. Which player in the Nottingham Forest side would actually say that they wouldn't want to go to play for, inverted commas, another big club if the opportunity came? But, you know, at the end of the day, he said, I'm at Brentford, so I'm going to do what he's going to do. And you know where his focus is going to be on Saturday, because he's going to want to score a goal. He's going to want to prove to the world that they've missed him, that they shouldn't have locked him away for 8 months, and he's going to do the business. So it's going to be a bit of a tingler, isn't it, Scott?
I think so. And, you know, fair play, Ivan Toney. You know, he's going to be chomping at the bit. And you know, whether that is because he's going to put himself in the shot window, or actually he's probably thinking, I just want to be back on the pitch and getting amongst the goals, because he's been away for so long. So, yeah, so that is going to be, you know, a huge thing. And potentially that's what the game's going to hinge on. Obviously, with your kind of recent form, we've been struggling. We're not firing on all cylinders yet. So I think it's, yeah, potentially is going to come down, you know, to Ivan Toney. If he, you know, if he has a really good game, then you know he's your match winner that you've been missing.
Yeah, and again, we said this again on the pod. It's, you know, it's actually not been a case of us not creating big opportunity chances. I know that you hate us and our XG, but it, to us, it's important because it basically shows you what you're doing. And the fact is that we're doing the right things, but we're just not putting the ball in the back of the net. If you've got some people who are doing some great build-up play, but then you've got someone who is either not quite match fit or doesn't quite do the business of somebody else who maybe is a more experienced striker or experienced forward, so that they don't put them chances away, then you end up basically those chances going begging. And we've had quite a lot of chances going begging, but we're creating the opportunities. And if that happens for me, I'm actually quite happy. I'm very nervous if we are not creating opportunities, because if you're not creating them, then you're not going to score. So we're just hoping that Ivan Toney is going to be the final kind of piece of the jigsaw, where we basically create the opportunities and he's the one to put them in the back of the net. But we'll see. You know, it might take him a month to warm up, but, you know, we shall see. The main thing about it is for us, we're happy, still happy to be here. We're enjoying ourselves in the Premier League. Like I said to you, Forest fans can come down. They can literally drink in any pub in Brentford or Kew. You ain't gone to those bouncers on the door. It's very much like going to Forest, which I really enjoy going out to Forest. We had a great laugh when you came down last time, didn't we? We had a good night. We spoke to Sean Dyche in that pub by the riverside. We went on very late and we drank somewhere else, and then we ended up kind of crashing out at some hotel somewhere, you know, which sounds all dodgy, but no, it wasn't like that. Which was great. But Brentford's like that as well, where you can literally go anywhere and you'll be kind of welcomed as long as you've got the manners, you know, and you come inside there, have a drink and just don't take the piss, basically. So like I said to you, I'm looking forward to it on Saturday. I'm sure you're looking forward to it on Saturday. And let's just see how it goes. I'm going to ask you, Scott, though. Brentford, I mean, you've talked about players. Just quickly, just before we go on to, is there anyone that you're a little bit nervous about, considering we've got loads of players that are injured? So you probably mentioned their name and they're not going to play.
No, I think Norgaard, who you mentioned, was, you know, he was outstanding at Forest earlier in the season. He just, you know, I thought he ran the show. Brumo, again, what an underrated player he is in the Premier League. So again, you know, I don't really know too much, you know, about Brentford. Obviously, you lost the keeper. But, you know, we know what we get with Brentford. You know, it's just well-oiled, well-drilled. Going to play, you know, get the foot on the ball and try to dictate and dominate the game. So it doesn't... I don't think Brentford is so much about the individuals. We know what we're going to come... We know what we're going to come up against. So, you know, we expect it'll be difficult. And Forest are going to have to work hard to, you know, to get themselves, you know, into the game. So we'll just have to see. But I think similar to Brentford, we have been creating more chances under Nuno. But, you know, missing Taiwo Awoniyi's been injured, he'll be out. So we'll just have to see. Chris Wood's been missing a few of late. But, you know, a point we will take. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if we could nick a win.
Oh, there you go. So give us a score prediction.
I'm going to go with an optimistic 2-0 Forest.
Oh, 2-0 to Forest. We're going to give my score a little bit later with Laney on the podcast there. So listen, it's great to chat to you, Scott, like you know what I'm saying. You know, it's great to, like I said to you, in a really strange way, like I said to you, I want, you know, because listen, at the end of the day, it's like you look at your position and other people's position. But I actually want Forest to stay up because, as you know, I love just coming down there for the away day. But at the end of the day, I'd like you also to stay up if you do it without cheating. You know what I'm saying? So listen, next time, just stop by and
all. Just get that in before I call off.
That's right.
You know, there's a good, healthy banter with Brentford, and it, you know, it's always quite nice that you have these links with other clubs. Because obviously, Derby, you know, we're not going to play them anytime soon at the minute. So, so we'll have a little bit of needle and some sensible banter. I don't think it's ever gone over into kind of unwarranted or unwanted territory, I think, with Forest and Brentford fans. And I think it's all been fairly good-natured.
But you did say before we come on the air, oh, I'm getting a bit fed up of Brentford. You're moving into Derby territory, which you said, which I was thinking, whoa, it's not getting that bad, is it? And you never want to sell a player to Brentford. It's like, this. What have we done to you?
You'll keep dragging me on these podcasts to face the music if we did. So, you know, I'm here. I'm representing the club. We're on here. And let's see. But it's good to have banter with other clubs. And it's great that we've got this little bit of rivalry that's gone back a few years and it's built. So we're kind of, you know, we're still a little bit behind you. But, So long as we keep spending in check moving forward and so we don't get a 10-point deduction, then fingers crossed we're playing you again next season.
That's right, that's right. So anyway, listen, I'm just going to just sign it off to say I've got a big present that I've got sorted out for you. I've got a subscription to Microsoft Excel for yourself, and you can also give it to your club owners so that they can actually go away and they could put in the numbers inside there and they can make sure that they don't go over £105 million a year, and you'll be sorted and you don't have to have these heartaches anymore. You know what I'm saying? So, which is all good. So anyway, listen, Scott, good to chat to you, mate. Listen, we will chat after the game on Saturday.
Okay, okay. Good talk to you, Bill.
So there's me and the man, Scott Healy. Talking Forest, talking Brentford. Lainey, listen, you know, we've talked, listen, I talked a lot to Scott about that. Listen, let's just have a little kind of post-conversation chat between ourselves about this Forest game. We've already talked on this podcast before how excited we are, as Brentford fans are, just because it's like moving out of the Groundhog Day scenario. Beforehand, it's literally every game is like Groundhog Day. You're literally looking for to field an 11 almost. And it's almost like Ivan Toney and Reguilon in the side is going to change that up as well. Obviously, there's going to be a big boost because him coming back, he's a big person in the side. So hopefully it's going to give us a big boost. Nottingham Forest, obviously, they could be in a little bit of a pickle. So they're going to have their tails up to make sure that they're actually not going to pull themselves down into that zone, because that could happen as well. They've got new manager as well, you know, the centre as well. So, you know, they've got that as well. So this could tee itself up to be a bit of a game, couldn't it?
Oh, it's going to be massive. I think the atmosphere inside the GTEC is going to be off the scale. I think, you know, fans need to get themselves down the pub and have a couple of liveners, get in there and sing their hearts out. You know, I think, you know, you add that to the debut of Reguilon and the return of Ivan. And if there's any other good news from returning players, I think it could be a night to remember. And, you know, taking nothing for granted. You know, they're no real mugs, Forest, but they're on a real sticky run themselves. It's one of those teams that you probably would want to be playing in this situation. You obviously wouldn't want to be playing Man United or Man City or Liverpool or Arsenal, or necessarily, you know, possibly Newcastle. But, you know, it's one of those teams like Forest and Palace and Luton and Sheffield United and, you know, Everton, maybe not Everton really. It's the ideal opposition. You know, they're capable of coming and winning themselves, but I think in these circumstances, I think we can give this a right good go and we stand every chance of winning it.
Yeah, and again, you know, there's a little bit of irony, because obviously, you know, we talked about Brennan Johnson. You know, Brennan Johnson was Brentford been tracking him from time. So when he was at Lincoln, right, he wasn't even playing for Forest. Like, you know, we put in a bid for him when he was at Lincoln, playing the playoff final. Like I said to you, didn't quite get him. He started off at 12. You know, it's actually, like I said to you, a US side actually that put the first bid in for him, which is about $2 million to be got to. So it's actually an MLS side that started it off, and actually we came in, and then we came in higher than that. So 10, 12, stopped off about 14 or so. You know, maybe if we'd gone at 16, we could have got him at that time, but he was unproven in the Championship at the time. So we may have stopped off then, as we know history goes, and we've basically been in for them because we believe that he ticked a load of boxes. Okay, so season, you know, or window after window, we kept going in for him and it went up and up and up. But as we say, right, and again, we're not saying it arrogantly, we just know this as well, the reason why we do have difficulty in signing players is because agents do go, by the way, Brentford are in for them, and then next minute they go to the bigger clubs. The bigger clubs come in and put a wheelbarrow of money in. So Tottenham will come in next minute, as soon as they've come in, we're completely out the window, just like Mudryk, who we were in for two windows before Chelsea as well. Then as soon as they come in and Arsenal come in, boom, you know, it's gone up to 80 million from the 60 million that we'd offered for Mudryk, and we're out the window. So we need to make these deals and cut them early. Now, the point is, like I said to you, is my belief is that if Brennan Johnson had come in at that stage, we'd have done the development thing that we normally do with players, you know, like King Lewis Potter as well, 1 year's development, Jan Malik as well, 1 year's development, even though you pay decent money for them, because they come in and they learn the Brentford way and then they slip into the side and eventually become key players for you. As soon as you get the big money come in, the 60 million come in, Tottenham think he's got to deliver quickly. And then if he can't deliver quickly because he hasn't done the development, all the fans are on his back going, he's rubbish, he's crap. Now, I think he's a good player, but I think that he's made the wrong move. But the irony is also is that Forest, holding out for the big 60 million now, put themselves into FFP. I mean, to me, it makes no sense whatsoever.
No sense whatsoever. Delighted that we didn't get him. Any, you know, once it reached a certain point, and from what I've seen with my own eyes at Forest and at Tottenham, he's not worth that kind of money. Well done for Forest for getting him. I'm not well done for Forest for taking all their other spending so high that they needed that to put them within the rules. They've cheated. We haven't. If they don't think they deserve a points deduction, we deserve a points addition. the teams that have played by the rules shouldn't come at the detriment of those that have played by the rules. You know, we've stuck within our spending requirements and our obligations, and we shouldn't be in an inferior position to Nottingham Forest. They have broken the rules. They knew what the rules were. If they thought they were being clever, and they seem to be using the Brennan Johnson delayed, oh, we did it for business reasons. Well, you shouldn't have made all those other signings until you got the money in. You know, that's what we've done. So it isn't fair. They can cry and say it's unfair, they're picking on us. There's the rules. If you break the rules, you get punished. That's what Ivan Toney said. You know, he can there's no point in him moaning about it. He did break the rules and he got punished. I think Nottingham Forest deserve all that's going to come their way, hopefully. I just, it's nothing against them
as a club, not the fans, because the fans, they don't make the decisions. The fans don't.
As a Forest fans, and I'm not saying they're not, they need to take their anger out on their owner and those that have made those decisions. They're the ones that have put them in that position. You know, they're the only people to blame are the ones that have been running the club. You know, that everyone else is abiding by the same rules, apart from the ones that are breaking it. And the whataboutery with Man City and Chelsea, yes, that has to be dealt with. But that's not to say that everyone else, their misdemeanours should be ignored as well. Everyone that's broken the rules has to be punished. We're not breaking the rules. We cannot come off. We cannot be coming out of this as in a worse situation than those that have broken. It's not fair.
Yeah, okay. We hear that as well. And like I said, you talk about that with Scott a little bit now. So it's interesting to see that. You know, but, you know, just going back to it, listen, we need to focus on the football. And just like we have to focus on our football with no players injured, and that's just what's happened because we couldn't afford to buy players, so we have to deal with it as well. Again, Nottingham Forest, again, they're in a situation where they've done something and they haven't got away with it, so they just have to deal with it. So it's almost like that Ivan Toney-ish, okay, let's basically reflect, let's realise the situation and let's just deal with it and just move forward, like, you know what I'm saying? So just quickly about Nottingham Forest, where their strengths are counter-attacking, very strong, aerial duels also very strong, attacking down the wing strong, stealing the ball from the opposition is strong, where their weaknesses is keeping possession of the ball, finishing scoring chances, avoiding offside, avoiding fouling in dangerous areas, defending set pieces, and they're very weak at protecting the lead. Again, with Brentford's record the last couple of months, we can't actually say, you know, if that's a good thing or a bad thing anymore. But like I said to you, at least we've got a couple of more, little bit of armoury in our workforce now, in our armour. You know what I'm saying? We've got a couple more soldiers in our armour now, the armour to actually kind of actually deal with that situation.
Got a question for you, Bill. Strakosha or Flecken?
Oh, personally, actually, I'd probably put Strakosha in, I'd say, at the moment now. I would put Strakosha, but you know that's not going to happen, you know, because they want to ensure that the goalkeeper remains confident because they believe that he can get to the next stage and they probably see him much more than what we do. So, I think we just have to just brief our defenders to make sure they don't get any shots on, is all I can say, because he doesn't seem to keep very many clean sheets, Flecken. So I think for Forest fans, if there's anything, like, you know, that's one little bonus for them. They think at least we're going to score, so, which is all good. So final thing, lady, score prediction.
Well, I think it's going to be a bonkers game. And I think Brentford are going to edge it just. I think I'm going to go for Brentford 3, Forest 2.
Oh, and I'm going to go Brentford 2, Forest 1. So looking forward to it. This is Besotted Pride of West London podcast. Looking forward to my Forest chums coming down. We've got Greg and his Forza Garibaldi posse coming down. He said he might even come down and go down to Richmond and go to the old Ted Lasso Boozer as well. We might take a little trip down to Kew, so we may see him down there as well, and everybody else coming down. Scott Ealy, as we said, we heard from before, and all the other characters. But like I said to you, very much looking forward to it. All Brentford fans, see you on Saturday. We've got Billy the Bee here in London. We've got Laney in Cambodia.
See you later, everyone. Give him a cheer from me. Wish I could be there Saturday, but I'll be back for the Tottenham game.
Come on, as we say, come on, you bees. It's Ivan Tony at the helm. You bees.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is, that's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van, unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.